Is it just me, or is it getting really hard to figure out the best way to save for retirement? Fidelity can help you find clarity so you can save the best way for you. With a free personalized plan, goal tracking, and timely insights, you'll be set to take on retirement your way. Get started at fidelity.com/future. Expenses charged by your investments and other costs and fees associated with trading or transacting in your account apply. Fidelity Brokerage Services member NYSE SIPC.
Last word on sport.
With Energia, supporting Irish rugby at every level. Energia, think of the possibilities.
And you're welcome back to The Last Word. We'll be looking at the weekend's rugby action in a little bit shortly, but let's focus on the weekend's Premier League games. I'm joined by Will O'Callaghan from Off The Ball, and Miguel Delaney, chief football writer with The Independent, is with us. Guys, let's start with the big game of the weekend, or it's no longer a big game given where they are on the table, but the Manchester derby. Oh, Miguel, where do you start with it? Who would have thought a couple of games into the season that Man United would be beating City?
Well, I mean, I have to say, it went from one of the worst Manchester derbies I've ever watched and least entertaining to one of the most momentous, given that ending, and also given, I suppose, the potential significance of that ending. I mean, one, what it does for Manchester United and how badly needed the win was, given it would have been three defeats in a row and kind of really stunted momentum, especially given Amorim's, I mean, you'd say risky decision to drop Rashford and Garnacho. But also on the other side, given what it does for Manchester City and really just perpetuates what is now, I mean, we're beyond the fact that we're saying this is a crisis. It is real trouble for them. And quite a fascinating storyline in that context.
Yeah, well, we'll get back to the game in a moment, but it was the comments afterwards by Pep Guardiola.
Was it Steve Staunton? Was it Pep Guardiola?
I'm not good enough. This is what he said. And if he's not good enough, what's he doing there?
It is a bit worrying, isn't it? Where obviously answers have to be found for what's happened over the last 11 games over the past 2 months. And I know on Friday, he very clearly identified the issue as the fixture schedule, and that has led to Manchester City's energy levels dipping. It has been accumulation of injury and fatigue, which has been a problem. Much has been spoken about, particularly Rodri's impact not being here for these last 11 games, where City have won just once against Nottingham Forest, who are now above them in the Premier League table. But he has tried to change many things. He changed keeper for the Liverpool game. He has put Nunes in as almost an emergency left back, and he played okay for the best part, but then makes a mistake which leads to one of the Manchester United goals. Erling Haaland is entirely out of sorts now at this stage with the way that they're playing. And as Miguel said, it was completely dour for 80 minutes, which has to fall on both teams, not just on Manchester City. But this Man City team, who've looked so electric, who create so much over the last 8-9 years of Pep Guardiola's tenure, didn't look like creating anything. They scored from a corner, which is Manchester United's Achilles heel at the moment. But in open play, so few chances were created. A goal, a year now since Jack Grealish has scored a goal for Manchester City, which sums it up. Formerly one of the most creative and influential players when he played for Aston Villa, and even in the early stages at Man City, he looks entirely blunted. Even with Kevin De Bruyne back in the team yesterday, City weren't creating a lot. They were plodding their way through the first 80 minutes of that game. And then when Manchester United got the goals, it never looked like City were actually going to turn it around. And the most electric player we saw on both sides is the man who has looked reinvigorated and who looks perfectly set for this Manchester United Amorim team, who was Amad Diallo, who got the winner, who played a key role in the penalty, which was scored by Bruno Fernandes as well. And he plays with a freedom and an excitement that went beyond a lot of the conservative play that we saw from both teams during the game.
Had that game gone on a bit yesterday, if there had been a bit more extra time added on, you would have fancied Man United to actually get another one. And I suppose it begs the question, what has Ruben Amorim found in the last week or so that justifies the performance towards the end and gives him a bit of hope for the next couple of weeks?
Miguel. No, I was just going to say, the thing about what it's done for Amorim, and you can take it up from there, is that it entirely vindicates what happened before the match, where Garnacho and Rashford are not involved and they're staying at Carrington to train. It probably feels incredibly different, Ian, if they had lost that game and he'd made that big decision to leave both out.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, to be fair, I mean, United weren't good for most of the game, but I did think they were the only team actually trying to play. They just aren't doing it well at the moment because they're still learning a new manager structure. The team has been at a low ebb because of what's gone on before, recent results. There's a lot of change. But they did actually try and do something, and you could see the beginnings of something, and they got the reward for that. And, I mean, I think, yeah, exactly, as Will said there, that's very significant. But what's increasingly striking me through all this now, and I mean, they're obviously at different, very different stages of process, given Amorim has just taken the job, and you get the extra benefit when risky decisions like the Garnacho Rashford one come off. But if you contrast that right now to Guardiola, Guardiola is obviously on basic terms, success, influence, whatever you want to say, one of the greatest managers of all time. And yet, I'm not sure he's actually managing this situation very well. I know it's difficult for him, but it does seem a little bit as if this has all become wrapped up as if it's about his own legacy, rather than just showing some leadership and guiding the team through. I know he can't help it, but I don't think the way he's talking about it all, and even those comments he had yesterday, is exactly helping City here.
Yeah, because, Will, as I said, if he's there thinking, well, I'm the problem, I'm the one, you should be there putting in what are the players that are working for him right now, and that he's not concentrating on that.
Yeah, it's like Gary Neville said afterwards, so he was thinking back to when Manchester United had a little bit of a slump after they'd won the treble, and some of the, I suppose, hunger levels dropped a little bit. Now, that hasn't for City, because they retained their title and went 4 in a row off the back of the treble the year before, but this year it really feels like this is a generational shift with this team, and maybe it's time for that team to be broken up. He said the Ferguson just changed little things. It would be, say, if they had a bad performance, he wouldn't bring them back training the next day, or he would bring them back really early and give them a bollocking. But it's almost like Ferguson knew how to push the buttons and knew how to manage the situation out. With Guardiola, it feels like they're just kind of lumbering from week to week to week without any real great improvement to what they're doing. And so many times we've expected them to turn a corner, and you're thinking this is a massive match and they're going to put in a performance. And then you saw them lose to Sporting when managed by Amorim just a few weeks ago, the Juventus game during the week. You thought maybe the Nottingham Forest result would be enough to kickstart things again. Then you saw the performance that they had against Spurs where they lost 4-0 at home. And it just feels like week after week, this is a team who are entirely dejected. And you could have Bernardo Silva again yesterday giving an interview saying that this was schoolboy stuff and they defended like an under-15 team in the last 10 minutes of the game. And look, those players have to take responsibility. These are huge winners, Ian, who've collected incredible medals over the last few years. But it just feels like they're in a massive funk at the moment and Guardiola does not know how to pull them out of it. He's never had to deal with this, though, because for the best part, at Barcelona, when he decided and he said the seatbelt was too tight and he had to leave the club, they were still in a very, very strong position, albeit up against Real Madrid in the title race that season. At Bayern Munich, for the best part, it was the failures, as it was seen in the semi-finals of the European Cup, which saw him lose a leave. But it has never been a case of a 10 or 11 game slump like this at any club he's been at before.
Yeah, and Miguel, the conclusion many people will draw is come the transfer window in January, Man City will just throw open the checkbook and sign a couple of players to make the problem go away. Is the problem that needs to go away Pep himself?
Well, I suppose, to be fair, if he got a bolstered squad, it would help him. Because I think there are bigger issues here where, like, and this was said, I've said this a few times on the show, I've written it, I think there are parallels of what happened to Mourinho in 2015-16. And they are two intense managers in very different ways. I think this City team, because of, I suppose they haven't really regenerated the team in the way they used to very impressively. But this team, a lot of the players are late 20s, early 30s. I suppose they're a little bit sick of his message. And in usual situations like that, what would happen is you get rid of the manager rather than the players because it's a lot easier to do. Obviously, that's not going to happen with City and Guardiola, so spending would help solve the problem. In the same way that actually Ferguson used to always have a massive overhaul of his team every 3 or 4 years. But of course, there's another dimension to that. City actually have, unlike a lot of their rivals, because of the business they've done over the past few years, they've got a lot of headroom in terms of the Premier League's PSO regulations, meaning they would be able to spend a lot this January and next summer. But of course, there is one great factor there, which is if City comes to you with a very attractive offer, are players going to be, they're surely going to be thinking about, well, what's going to be the outcome of the hearing in February? In that context, given people are talking about expulsion and City insist upon their innocence, but why would a player go to them this January? Which sort of kind of compounds a lot of the issues. It's become such a fascinating storyline from that perspective, with so many different factors almost making this worse. And at the moment, it doesn't really feel like there's much of an end to it. Even the next game, Villa away, is difficult. But then after that, they've got a series of forgiving games over Christmas. But in a crisis that can almost become worse, because at the moment anyone can get at them, anyone fancies a chance against them, and then the easier games actually become more of a problem because you fail to get results in them if it does develop along those lines.
Yeah, let's move on now to some of the other games over the weekend. Well, Arsenal, the prospect of getting back and chasing Chelsea and Liverpool at the top, you would have fought an Everton team that weren't playing for the week beforehand because Merseyside Derby was cancelled, were there for the taking.
Well, this is a classic Sean Dyche performance from Everton at the weekend. They were not concerned about the creative side of the game. Mikel Arteta said directly afterwards, I didn't have a shot on target throughout the entire match. They just sat back and made it difficult for us. But there's a bit of a repeating pattern here, Ian, which is a reliance on Bukayo Saka to be the player that stretches the opposition. So Arsenal are not getting goals or assists from the players who are over on the left-hand side. They badly need Martinelli or Trossard to start chipping in. And therefore, we have seen this reliance on whether it's Bukayo Saka via Odegaard as well, who's obviously a key creator within their team, making the space that gets the ball eventually to Odegaard or to Havertz, who generally arrive quite late into the box. So they don't have a prolific number nine. So teams are now happy enough to just make it very congested over on their left-hand side, make sure that Saka is unable to get those individual runs to create space, and then Arsenal become a much more easy team to defend against. And Everton were happy enough. Now, Pickford made a couple of good saves during the game, but for the best part, they thought we're going to defend our box and make it very, very difficult to get in behind us, and they got away with a point. Maybe they were helped by the fact they were fresh with the Merseyside derby having not taken place, but to me, that felt like a classic Dyche team performance, and Arsenal weren't able to find the answers.
Yeah, Miguel, I suppose if you are looking at the chasing pack for Liverpool out there, the only ones that are doing it right now is Chelsea. And again, that win yesterday against Brentford, they're looking really good, Chelsea.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, it's not something a lot of us expected in the summer when Chelsea's business of the past 2 years has been criticised. They were painted as a bit of a farce, I suppose, especially with, you know, the way Pochettino left, even Maresca being appointed, someone who'd only had a year of coaching, and even Leicester fans would have said there were like caveats to that despite him bringing them up. But so there's one thing about spending that much money on young players is that some of them will be good. And that's what, and as we've seen above all with Cole Palmer, and now the evolution of Caicedo, how Lavia has started to have an impact. And Maresca is also showing himself as a very good manager. I'm still a little bit dubious over whether they can sustain this for a title challenge. But the one thing that has to be said is this could yet end up a strange season because the calendar is so congested. And I think that, and like, if you know, people like Guardiola, and to be fair, he's not the only one are saying it now in December. Well, you've got the busy Christmas schedule to come. Then you've got, for the first time ever, European fixtures in the middle of January, as well as a quick or immediate follow on for those who don't make it into the top eight of the various competitions where they've got playoff games. That, come April, May, could suddenly create a lot of surprises and a lot of teams that are kind of are missing players, especially with the way that PSOR has limited expenditure. So I think at the moment, I think at the top of the league, and actually it's funny, Chelsea actually are probably one of the more complete squads with the less obvious need to sign a player. I mean, you brought up Arsenal there. Like, at this point, it seems obvious with Arsenal, they just need another, they need another forward, another outlet, another player that kind of top quality, just so it's not always on Odegaard and Saka in that way. And a problem for them has become how they sit deep. But yeah, Chelsea have got a lot of angles, and Palmer seems so perfect for what they do as well.
Well, everyone chasing Liverpool, and if you're looking at Liverpool, okay, again, they had the benefit of the week off and didn't really take it and had to rely on Jota, fantastic goal for the second goal for the equaliser. But again, having to be from behind and try and get those equalisers.
Yeah, from behind twice. Played the vast majority of the game with 10 men. I don't think anyone could really argue with Robertson's red card. That becomes a bit of a concern too, because Mikasa hasn't really overtaken him as the first choice left back, and Robertson has definitely declined a little bit over the last year or two. So left back is now a problem area for Liverpool. You could look at it two ways here. I think that's the way that Arne Slot was looking after the game as well, which was, he was happy with the result, but not the performance against Girona, and it was almost the opposite in the game at the weekend, whereby he felt, okay, Liverpool rallied reasonably well the two times that they went behind in the game, but was disappointed to drop a couple of points against Fulham. Should be said that Fulham are no mugs and have played really well against the top teams in the Premier League, and we're seeing some players who, definitely Robinson, I thought was very impressive on Saturday afternoon. And you saw that Liverpool badly need Jota back in the team as well. You saw Darwin Nunez having an absolute nightmare in Spain during the week in the Champions League. And then, as you say, Jota comes in and is clinical when the chance comes to him towards the end of the match. And Liverpool are able to eke out a draw, which when the teams around them, with the exception of Chelsea, who are now two behind with the game in hand, when they would have found out that Arsenal dropped points at home to Everton as well, it doesn't feel maybe as much of a dropped points when the rivals also do the same. But still, there's a Liverpool team now have dropped points two games in a row in the Premier League. So we shall see how the Christmas period is going to test them. Maybe a few weeks ago we were thinking this 11 points clear in Man City, it felt like it was entirely over. Certainly plenty of signs that Liverpool can be got at the weekend as well.
Yeah, and heading into a game at the weekend against Spurs, Miguel, that, okay, putting five past Southampton these days, a lot of teams will do that, but it'll ease the pressure on Ange Postecoglou, and he will think, I can do Liverpool given the last couple of Premier League games that they've drawn.
Yeah, and like again, one of the trends of Spurs' season up until that Chelsea defeat, actually, which did look as if it could push Postecoglou over the edge, was that they've won a lot of big games and lost a lot of games against forgiving opposition. Now, maybe that's flipped on its head a bit, but it does offer a different angle to this Liverpool game. Liverpool may be another team that are just, like, results have just dropped slightly. I mean, you don't want to criticise them too much, given Slot has done a superb job. They've stayed so constant, especially in the Champions League. But, you know, home draws to mid-table sides, as good as Fulham were, that wasn't something that was happening recently. They had developed a knack for just winning these games in a way that no one else could. So maybe we're just seeing a little bit of vulnerability from Liverpool. And it does make that a huge game for the weekend, especially given potential consequences elsewhere.
Yeah, and rounding out the top four, somebody, a team we probably wouldn't have thought about now, given where Man City's travails, is Nottingham Forest, Will.
Yeah, I mean, all credit to them. They're in their best position after 16 games for some 30 years now at this stage, with the way they've gone this season. And look, they've gone to Old Trafford, they've gone to Anfield, they've played a lot of their difficult away games already. And this is an Aston Villa team, though, who have horrific form when it comes off European games. They haven't won any off the back of any of the Champions League games. I'm not sure if that's due to fatigue, which is coming around. Their squad is being more tested this season. They played very, very defensively and forced Nottingham Forest to play in the front foot. And of course, after they scored, Nottingham Forest were forced to try and come from behind. I think it's the first time the Nottingham Forest have got a victory from behind since 2022. And it's also, I think, the latest goal that they've scored in a couple of seasons as well. So this feels like a really, really important result for them, though, because, you know, they are hanging in there. I don't think that they're going to do a Villa and finish in the Champions League spots at the end of the season, but they have to be so, so happy with their work up to this point. And that was Alanga's first goal of the season as well for them, and he could be a very important player for the rest of the season. Some of these teams are just starting to hit a bit of form. Crystal Palace the same, with the hammering that they gave Brighton yesterday as well. And maybe we're starting to see in that Brighton, again, are a team who are better when they counterpunch against bigger teams than when they're forced to force the agenda themselves. They leave themselves a bit open on the break.
Just finally, Miguel, briefly, a couple of managers lost their jobs today. I suppose Gary O'Neill, he acknowledged the last couple of days himself that he was more likely to go.
Yeah, I have a bit of sympathy for him. I know O'Neill actually rubs a lot of people up the wrong way, and he can be quite strident in post-match interviews and that. But like, he wasn't a club Wolves. I mean, it's not the Wolves of 5 years ago. They're not spending in the way they did then. They've sold a lot. What is it? Close to 250 million worth of talent, with only Cunha really of the kind of the level of that where they had a few years ago, where Moutinho and Neves and like a strong team. And they have been a club that have been on this kind of long-term decline for a few years now, that kind of culminates in moments like this. And well, Russell Martin and Southampton, I mean, that it's maybe surprising it hasn't come earlier.
Okay, Miguel Delaney and Will O'Callaghan, thank you very much for joining us.
The Last Word on Today FM.